coming up after this latest world news headline.
I'm Ray Kugel reporting. Still no end to Iran nuclear talks. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry says if certain decisions are not made in the Iran nuclear talks, the negotiators are ready to end the discussions. Speaking in Vienna Thursday, Secretary Kerry said that real progress is being made toward a comprehensive agreement, but that the quality of the agreement is the issue.
We know that difficult decisions don't become easier over time. And one way or the other, those decisions must be taken very soon.
Iran's Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif says he is prepared to stay at the negotiating table in Vienna as long as necessary to come to an agreement with leading nations on Iran's nuclear program. Greece delivered its latest proposal for economic reforms to European finance ministers, who must decide whether they will grant the struggling government another desperately needed bailout. Little information is available about what is in the new package from Athens, but reports say it includes EU demands for a boost in some sales taxes and cuts in spending. The Greek parliament will meet today to decide whether to endorse the reforms, and the entire 28-member European Union will hold an emergency summit on the Greek situation Sunday. Liberia's government says two new cases of Ebola have emerged from the same community where the disease recently resurfaced. It's triggering fears the virus may again be taking hold in that West African country. Health officials say the number of confirmed Ebola cases in Liberia is now up to five, including a 17-year-old boy who died from the disease last month. This is VOA News. The United Nations announced a humanitarian pause in fighting will begin at the end of today in Yemen, providing a break in Saudi-led airstrikes and fighting with a Houthi militia that will allow aid to reach millions of Yemenis around the country. A UN spokesman says the unconditional humanitarian pause will continue until the end of Ramadan in about a week. Former Saudi Arabian Foreign Minister Prince Saud Al-Faisal, one of the most prominent members of the Saudi royal family, has died. Saudi officials gave no cause of death. He was 75 years old. Prince Saud led the country's foreign affairs for 40 years before retiring in April, apparently for health reasons. He was the world's longest-serving foreign minister when he stepped down. The U.S. National Security Advisor harshly criticized South Sudan on the anniversary of its independence, saying President Salva Kiir and the former vice president, rebel leader Riek Machar, are directly responsible for the country's return to war. Susan Rice said that in contrast to the joy that accompanied South Sudan's independence in 2011, the situation there in South Sudan today breaks my heart. The U.S. Office of Personnel Management now says hackers have stolen sensitive information involving 21.5 million people from federal government databases. The scope of the data breach, believed to be the biggest in U.S. history, has grown dramatically since the government first disclosed earlier this year that hackers had gotten into OPM's personal database and stolen the records of about 4.2 million people. South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley signed a bipartisan bill removing the Confederate battle flag from the grounds of the state capitol. Lawmakers in South Carolina's House of Representatives followed the state Senate when they passed the bill Thursday after more than 13 hours of emotional debate.
We're a state that believes in respect, so we will bring it down with dignity, and we will make sure that it is put in its rightful place.
The flag will be taken down from the pole during a ceremony today. The head of the U.S. Federal Bureau of Investigation, James Comey, says agents broke up a number of terror plots in the weeks leading up to the Independence Day holiday last weekend. More than 10 people were arrested, but the FBI director gave no information on what they were plotting or where they planned to strike last July 4th. A U.S. general ranks Russia and China as the number one and two threats to the United States and its national security. Marine General Joseph Dunford says Russia's behavior is nothing short of alarming. The comments came during his confirmation hearing on Thursday before the Senate Armed Services Committee as the next chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, July 10th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Sierra Leone's President Ernest Bai Koroma says the world must not be complacent about Ebola.
Until Ebola is completely out, we will not stop. We have to continue this fight. And we'll encourage them to stay focused. This is a battle we must not lose.
President Ernest Bai Koroma. Meanwhile, there are now 5 new Ebola cases in Liberia. A senior United Nations official says Burundi is on the brink of slipping into darkness. The UN says Africa's economic growth is driven by services sector. And Ugandan police arrest 2 high-profile presidential hopefuls.
This was expected, but this is a victory for the resistance. Because you see, we've been struggling for a long time about whether Museveni presides over a democracy or a dictatorship.
General David Sejusa is Uganda's former intelligence chief. Meanwhile, Uganda's opposition demands the immediate release of Amama Mbabazi and Chisa Besigye. And South Sudan celebrates its 4th independence anniversary amid civil war. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The president of Sierra Leone has urged his people and the world not to become complacent about the Ebola virus, saying this is a battle we cannot lose. VOA's Margaret Bashir has more from the United Nations.
Sierra Leone's President Ernest Bai Koroma is in New York this week to participate in an international Ebola recovery conference at the United Nations. His country, Guinea, and Liberia are the epicenter of the health crisis that began last year, infecting more than 27,000 people in the 3 West African countries and killing more than 11,000. Liberia on Thursday announced 2 new cases of the disease, and Sierra Leone said it will extend a curfew in Ebola-affected areas. President Koroma warned that people are becoming complacent as the cases dwindle to a handful. He told VOA in an interview that the international community must remain focused on getting Ebola cases to zero, because only then will it be beaten.
But until Ebola is completely out, we will not stop. We have to continue this fight, and we'll encourage them to stay focused. It's been difficult for all of us. But that is where we find ourselves, and this is a battle we must not lose.
President Koroma said Ebola has reversed the substantial gains his country has made since the end of its civil war in 2002. Economic growth has stopped, the health sector must be rebuilt, schools need to reopen, people need jobs, and investment needs to resume. He said he is asking for close to $1 billion at the UN conference for his country's recovery.
Ebola has not isolated us as a region or as nations. We still have great potentials. We are still prepared to do business and are preparing to do business. We still want to get to where we were before Ebola struck.
It is a terrible situation to be in, Koroma added, especially when the country is on a positive path. But with international support, he said, Sierra Leone can get to 0 cases and stay there and begin the road to national recovery. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
Liberia is again ramping up its surveillance efforts as it battles the latest outbreak of Ebola. 2 more infections were confirmed on Thursday, putting the number of recent cases at 5. VOA's Mariam Diallo reports from Senegal's capital, Dakar.
John Sumo, the health promotion director at Liberia's Ministry of Health, says the 2 newest cases are under investigation and it isn't clear where the patients contracted the disease.
But one thing we want to emphasize is take all the preventive measures. It has been determined that, you know, things like baboon, fruit bats and things could be possible carriers. So we need to be mindful not to be eating those animals.
Christopher Dampoe, the spokesman for the community of Nendoan, where the new cases have been, says most people have adopted a new way of life.
Everybody has been glued to the house and not moving around, and they are happy that NGOs have come to the aid.
The World Health Organization representative in Liberia, Dr. Alex Kasasira, says the surveillance system in the country is fully operational.
When the initial case was confirmed, several of the contacts had moved out of the location to other places. and all the close contacts of the confirmed cases are accounted for and are being closely followed up every day.
As Liberia works to contain the outbreak, the United Nations also is focusing on Ebola. Secretary General Ban Ki-moon is holding an international conference on Friday to mobilize the resources to help Liberia, Guinea, and Sierra Leone recover from the epidemic. Philip Ireland, an emergency medicine physician in Monrovia and an Ebola survivor, says an essential part of that effort must be training.
Okay, like for example, you put a paramedic, a doctor, a nurse from other countries on the ground, and we learn from them through apprenticeship. After they leave, you will have 4 or 5 or 10 other persons that can do that job.
That's better than just throwing money at the countries, Ireland says. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Dakar.
In Uganda, presidential candidates Amama Mbabazi and Kizza Besigye were arrested Thursday for attempting to hold public meetings. Both were being held at police stations, and tensions were running high as police and supporters went head-to-head. Lizabeth Pollard has more from Kampala.
Presidential hopeful Amama Mbabazi and opposition leader Kizza Besigye have a lot in common these days. Both used to work closely with President Yoweri Museveni before falling out politically, and both were arrested Thursday as they tried to kick off meetings with their supporters. Mbabazi's meetings were scheduled in the eastern Ugandan town of Mbale. Mbabazi made it 3 hours out of Kampala before his car was stopped and he was put under what officials are calling preventative arrest. Officials say the meeting was deemed illegal because he failed to harmonize with his political party. Besigye was reportedly arrested not long after. Police said his notice of a meeting came too late and holding it violated the Public Order Management Act. Mbabazi was taken to a police station in Kampala where his supporters gathered outside. Not long after, his wife Jacqueline Mbabazi and outspoken General David Sejusa joined the crowd of supporters. Sejusa told supporters that the struggle was just beginning.
This was expected. He's dealing with a dictatorship. We are dealing with a dictatorship. But this is a victory for the resistance. This is a victory for the resistance. Because you see, we've been struggling for a long time about whether Museveni presides over a democracy or a dictatorship in order to handle this dictatorship, which is now a criminal outfit, really. They will have people now of Uganda will have to start thinking seriously about a new approach.
The crowd was pushed further and further back and became agitated as the afternoon wore on. One man who refused to be identified said that police harassment could lead to violence.
He was just like, what are you doing here? What are you waiting for? We have told him that we are waiting for our boss. He's in detention. We cannot leave this place when he's not yet out. We were the other side of the police. They told us to cross the road and come this side. We are this side. And then if they want to come again and remove us from here, where we are, then it cannot work. It is not time to start this battle. But if they push us on the road, then we can do otherwise.
Police soon began chasing supporters away, and physical altercations between supporters and police broke out. Tear gas and protests were also reported outside of the police station where Besigye is being held. Although the police refused to comment on the situation, many speculate that Mbabazi and Besigye will be released within the next 24 hours. Elizabeth Pola for VOA News, Kampala, Uganda.
Uganda's opposition Democratic Alliance has sharply condemned the arrest of two senior politicians and demanded their immediate and unconditional release. Former Prime Minister Patrick Amama Mbabazi from the ruling National Resistance Movement and Kizza Besigye of the Opposition Forum for Democratic Change were separately arrested on Thursday. The two are opponents of President Yoweri Museveni in next year's general election. Matthias Mpuuga is a member of parliament in the opposition Democratic Alliance Party. He tells reporter Peter Clotty that the group has warned the government to end the practice of using state institutions to harass and intimidate the opposition.
The ultimatum that has been given to the ruling party is to stop the brutality, stop the police partisanship, and respect the constitution of the Republic of Uganda, and allow individuals and parties to organize to compete. So we are waiting to listen to the response of the police and the government on this matter, because they know what they're doing is wrong, is unconstitutional, is an abuse of the rights of Ugandans, but they're adamant about it.
But how long is the period of the ultimatum?
I can tell you that the TPA has indicated that the government needs to explain to the country immediately what has happened. We do not expect, for instance, these two leaders and several other political party leaders, especially the FDC party leaders, a number of them that were going to attend the Dr. Besigye lounge, were also arrested and they have not been released. The only explanation, the police operations commander, one Andrew Felix Kawesa, said that these people have been arrested to prevent them from committing crimes. I am not going to state categorically here that today or tomorrow in the next hour, but we are evaluating every day, every minute, every hour, and we shall be informing the country what to do next.
But they are saying that laws should be enforced by the police as enshrined in the Constitution, and they are doing everything they can, the police that is, to ensure that there is no mayhem and peace and tranquility is not disturbed by these opposition groups, especially when they said former Prime Minister Mbabazi has yet to be given go-ahead by the chairman of the party, in this case, the president, President Museveni of the NRM.
Of course, that's the lunacy about their statement, because the position of the NRM constitution they are quoting does not exist anywhere, that for anybody to compete against Mr. Museveni, then he has to get his tacit approval. It's not there. But even if it were there, that position would be absolutely unconstitutional, because everybody has a right to aspire for a position of their choice without being barred by any other law, because the supreme law of the land, which is the Constitution, is very categorical about these issues.
Matthias Mpuuga is a leading member of Uganda's Opposition Democratic Alliance Party. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Kampala. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today's Friday, July 10th. Daybreak Africa time, 17 and a half minutes past the hour. A senior United Nations official says progress in Burundi is in danger of slipping away as President Pierre Nkurunziza presses ahead with his controversial plan to seek a third term. VOA's Margaret Bashir has more from the United Nations.
UN Deputy Political Chief Tebrook Zerahun told the Security Council the security situation in Burundi has been tense and volatile since legislative and communal elections were held on June 29th. Opposition parties boycotted that vote and are calling for President Nkurunziza not to run for a third term, which they say is unconstitutional.
Burundi is on the brink. Again, the grave danger the country faces should not be underestimated, given the increasing polarization and the apparent choice of Burundian leaders to put personal interests before those of the country.
Burundi is still recovering from a 12-year civil war that ended in 2005 and killed an estimated 300,000 people. In a report out this week, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon expressed concern about what he called the limited political space and the deterioration in the human rights environment in the wake of the current political crisis. UN Human Rights Commissioner Zaid Raad Al-Hussein told the Council via video link from Geneva that the risk to human life and to regional stability and development is high. But Burundi's UN ambassador, Albert Shingiro, downplayed the recent violence and said the June vote was free, transparent, and marked by an enormous voter turnout. He did not mention the possibility of President Nkurunziza withdrawing his candidacy, but said his government would consider a second postponement of the planned July 15 vote. He's heard here through an interpreter.
We'd be very happy to compromise a postponement of a week towards 21 or 22 would be totally fine pursuant to the Constitution, and we'd be okay with that type of a postponement.
He said Burundian and regional leaders are discussing this possibility, but opposition leaders have said what they really want is for the president not to run for re-election. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
South Sudan celebrated its fourth independence anniversary yesterday, Thursday, amid a 19-month-old civil war. As Charlton Doki of VOA South Sudan in Focus program reports from Juba, President Salva Kiir addressed the nation, calling for an end to the war as well as reconciliation.
Today is the opportunity for a change, a new beginning of forgiveness and embracing one another in order to move our country forward.
President Kiir called on all South Sudanese to leave the past 19 months of violence behind them and work together to restore peace in the nation.
As the theme of this fourth anniversary of independence is Together for a United and Peaceful South Sudan. If this is the theme, there is no room for revenge. People have to think for how to forgive one another. I urge you to join hands with me to stop this senseless war and work together for peace, reconciliation, and reconstruction of our country.
The president said he has worked tirelessly to end the fighting and the suffering of the people, and he vowed to continue to do so.
As your president, I do hear your cries for peace and stability. I know you want to support your families, move freely in your country without fear, and go back to business as usual. As you know, I haven't rested, and I think I will not rest until peace is achieved in South Sudan.
The president called on South Sudanese communities that have been torn apart by violence to reconcile through dialogue. And Mr. Kiir appealed to the armed opposition led by former Vice President Riek Machar to lay down arms and work alongside his government for peace. President Kiir also had a message for the tens of thousands of South Sudanese who are sheltering in UN camps across the country. I spoke with political analyst Jacob Chol about Mr. Kiir's speech. Chol, who is the head of the Political Science Department at Juba University, says Mr. Kiir tried to address the main issues of concern to South Sudanese, but he was short on specifics.
He tried to capture everything, but it was not really very comprehensive because the president talked about three goals within the strategies. And one goal was the immediate goal, where he talked about bringing peace to the people, and we're not clear how do we bring peace to the people of South Sudan. The second goal was the intermediate goal, issues to do with the reform within the party. But again, the reform was supposed to cover the whole government, actually. It's not about the party. And then the long-term goal were idea to do with reconciliation and healing. So this goal were not really complete. They were basically mentioned, but not really very practical enough.
That was political analyst Jacob Chol talking about President Kiir's Independence Day speech.
And that was Charlton Doki of VOA South Sudan in Focus program, reporting from Juba, South Sudan. A new report by the United Nations Conference on Trade and Development says Africa is driven by the services sector, but the 2015 report says the sector's potential is being undermined by poor infrastructure and regulatory shortcomings. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The UNCTAD report says Africa's services sector is attracting an increasing number of investors. It notes services now account for 30% of the economy in Africa. In fact, it says the industry has propelled growth in the gross domestic product in 30 out of 54 countries between 2009 and 2012. Examples of the booming services sector include mobile telephone communications in Kenya, lucrative financial services in Nigeria, South Africa, and Morocco, and growth in the tourism trade in the Seychelles and Mauritius. While services are on the rise, UNCTAD Deputy Secretary General Joachim Reiter says development of this sector is too little and too scattered. He says lack of well-functioning, effective infrastructure is a major problem.
For example, energy, water, telecoms, distribution, logistics, transport, just to mention a few that we recognize as belonging to infrastructure services. These are very important economically because in actual fact it's very difficult to be competitive as a trader in manufacturing or in agriculture unless you have the infrastructure services functioning.
Reiter says Africa is behind the curve when it comes to upgrading infrastructure services. And this, he warns, is having a negative impact on the ability of governments to meet the social needs of their people. He says many social services, such as the improvement of water and sanitation, are critical for achieving sustainable development goals.
The rise of services in Africa seems to be more by default than by design. So to give you a very concrete example, out of the countries that we looked at, very few countries have fundamentally incorporated the growth of services and the promotion of services into their national development plans. It's mentioned, but it's not integrated into the plan.
The report says effective regulation of infrastructure is essential to boost Africa's services sector and attract foreign investment. One area of concern is road freight, which it says is more expensive and of lower quality in Africa than in any other region of the world. Another problematic area is access to reliable sources of energy. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Olma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with athletics. Akani Simbini ran a lifetime best of 9.97 seconds in men's 100 meters to set a World University Games record and equal the South African national record in Gwangju, South Korea on Thursday. Simbini's gold medal is Africa's only medal at the Games so far. In Switzerland, Botswana's Nigel Amos ran 1 minute and 43.27 seconds to win 800 meters in the world's quickest time this year at the IWF Diamond League in Lausanne on Thursday. Kenyan Virginia Mnyambura triumphed in women's 3,000 meters steeplechase. South Africans Anaso Jobondwana, Louis van Zyl and Wenda Nel were runners-up in men's 200 meters, 400 meter hurdles and women's 400 meter hurdles respectively. Kenyan Faith Chepngetich Kipyegon and Ethiopian Yomif Kejelcha were second in women's 1500 meters and men's 5000 meters respectively. Turning to football, Argentina edged Senegal 4-3 at the FIFA Beach Soccer World Cup in Espino, Portugal on Thursday. In Switzerland, Swaziland is Africa's most improved national team, while the Central African Republic has slipped by the widest margin in the world, according to the FIFA rankings released in Zurich on Thursday. Placed 19th, Algeria is the highest-ranked African team. African champions Ivory Coast is 21st, Ghana 25th, Tunisia 32nd, Senegal 39th, Cameroon 42nd, Republic of Congo 40th, Cape Verde Islands 52nd, Egypt 55th, and Nigeria 57th. Elsewhere, debutants Egypt is drawn with the defending champions Cameroon, Ghana, and South Africa in Group B in women's football at the 2015 All-Africa Games. According to the draws in Cairo, Egypt on Thursday, Ivory Coast, Nigeria, Tanzania, and hosts Republic of Congo are in Group A. In men's football, Republic of Congo, Burkina Faso, Sudan, and Zimbabwe are in Group A, while Egypt, Ghana, Nigeria, and Senegal are in Group B. Meanwhile, Algeria's USM Algiers host Sudan's El Merreikh in Orange Africa Champions League mini-league action today, Friday. Tomorrow, Saturday, Algerians Mouloudia El Ulma engaged defending champions Entente Setif. On Sunday, Morocco's Maghreb Tetouan play the Democratic Republic of Congo's TP Mazembe as Sudan's El Hilal host Egypt's Smouha. Elsewhere, Tunisia's CS Sfaxien plays the Republic of Congo's AC Leopards in Orange Africa Confederations Cup mini-league action today, Friday. Tomorrow, Saturday, South Africa's Orlando Pirates play Egypt's Zamalek. Tunisians Esperance play Etoile du Sahel, while on Sunday, Mali's Stade Malien host Egyptian defending champions El Ahly. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good weekend, and we'll see you again on Monday. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Liberia's government said two new cases of Ebola have emerged from the same community where the disease recently resurfaced, triggering fears the virus may again be taking hold in the country. That is it for this Friday, July 10th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Mark Oman, along with our engineer Jim Harmon. I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very, very good weekend.
Next week on Straight Talk Africa, President Obama soon makes his last trip to Africa as president. He will attend the Global Entrepreneurial Summit in his ancestral homeland, Kenya. He will also travel to the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, will join him. And she will be Shaka Sali's guest next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa. Next on Let's Talk, join host Sandy Shomari and his guests discussing bribery, an issue of concern all over the world. This lighthearted show covers topics of your interest with some hilarity. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC. right here on VOA Africa. Right here on VOA Africa.